due to a technical correction, the staff report for this item needs to be replaced. The amended staff report is attached for your approval. The recommendation remains the same. Item B24 is submittal of a resolution authorizing execution of notice of completion for the, and it's Camborne, not Cambrone, place, Burton Drive Cooperative Road Project in Cambria, contract number P300191 and P300192, 2nd District. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that the title on the cover sheet be amended to include approve a corresponding budget adjustment in the amount of $15,000. Under hearing items, hearing to consider 7 proposals to establish or alter boundaries of agricultural preserves and 1 proposed farmland security zone for John and Mary Donati, Joseph and Jamie Keys, Fetzer Vineyard, Don Severa, Paul Page, Carrasco Properties LP, and Peter Harrison. Recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting that items E, F, and G, as listed in the staff report, be continued to November 1st. As a side note to the next page, though, that item has now been changed again, and it's not items B, it is... It's not E, F, and G. It's items B, C, and F will be continued to November 15th, and your board can take action to do that at the time you hear these items. And there are added items for board business. Item D1 is consideration of a request to direct planning staff to draft an interim ordinance relating to the use of the transfer of development credit pursuant to Government Code Section 65858 for those parts of the county within the review area of the Santa Margarita Area Advisory Council. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirements. And under closed session, you have added items under pending litigation, existing litigation, number 12, Building a Better Environment versus County of San Luis Obispo, number 13, Santa Margarita Area Residents Together versus County of San Luis Obispo, number 14, County of San Luis Obispo versus Level 3 Communications LLC, and number 15, San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace et al. Versus U.S. Nuclear Regulatory. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirements, and that's your changes for today.
Well done.
And thank you very much. With that, we will move to the presentation calendar.
Move approval. Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. Mr. Shajian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our first resolution commends to ConocoPhillips. I believe Mr. Anderson here. If you'll come to the podium, please, and feel free to invite your guest with you and introduce us to him as after we present the resolution to you. This resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery was founded by Union Oil Company in 1955, and whereas the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery has provided thousands of jobs for generations of Central Coast residents and has been a good neighbor to the community, donating time and funds to hundreds of local causes, including youth and education. And whereas the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery has also reflected environmental responsibility, continually reinvesting in facility upgrades to generate improvements in air quality and other measures. And whereas the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery has been a solid citizen and a valued member of the Central Coast, contributing to the quality of life and prosperity in our region. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby commend the ConocoPhillips Santa Maria Refinery on its 58th year of operation. Congratulations, gentlemen, and thank you for being good neighbors. Would you come forward and accept this resolution?
And what we'll do, we'll pause for the picture in a minute. So if you want to come forward, feel free to do so.
Thank you.
If you want to hold this down between you two, and we'll get together. And
Jerry and I get the back.
Be sure their heads are in the picture. Thank you.
Thank you.
And feel free to say a word. And
I would like to publicly welcome Mr. Anderson back from Iraq. Good to see you back.
Well, just on behalf of ConocoPhillips, just want to express our appreciation for recognition. We're, as you mentioned, celebrating our 50th anniversary this year, and we fully hope to be a valued member of the community in the years to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Setting you up for a fine at Rotary?
No, I think I'll be okay.
Okay.
You're supposed to say it's always a pleasure to invest with Rotary.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Do the next one?
Yes, please.
Okay, our next resolution, Mr. Toby Charles, would you come forward and accept this after I read it? This resolution is hereby offered and read. Resolution declares October 16th through 22nd of this year, 2005, as San Luis Obispo County Character Counts Week. Whereas young people will be the stewards of our communities, nation, and world in critical times, and the present and future well-being of our society requires an involved caring citizenry with good character. And whereas, more than ever, children need strong and constructive guidance from the families and their communities, including schools, youth organizations, religious institutions, and civic groups. Whereas the character of a nation is only as strong as the character of its individual citizens, and the public good is advanced when young people are taught that good character counts in personal relationships, in school, and in the workplace. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby declare the week commencing Sunday, October 16th, as San Luis Obispo County Character Counts Week, and endorses the six pillars of character and urges all citizens to seek out opportunities to incorporate these core ethical values in their work with young people, and encourages all citizens, corporate and individual, to model these traits of good character in an ongoing commitment to promote character development and ethical behavior in the youth of our community. Congratulations. If you'll come forward and accept this resolution, please.
Character is not made in a crisis. It is only exhibited. The true test of character is not how much we know how to do, but how we behave when we don't know what to do. There's a lot riding on our children's ability to understand the difference between right and wrong and have the strength of character to make those right choices. We must teach our children to be kind, responsible, honest, and self-disciplined. These important values are first learned in the family. While all of our citizens have the obligation to support parents in the character education of our children. As Martin Luther King Jr. stated, intelligence is not enough. Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education. With this proclamation, you are affirming the importance of good character in our society and helping guide our children to understand universal values such as respect, tolerance, compassion, and commitment to family and community. By sustaining these shared values and passing them on to our children, we can realize our common hope for a more just and honorable society and a brighter future for the generations to come. On behalf of the good citizens of San Luis Obispo County, we thank the Board of Supervisors for officially recognizing that character counts.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. And it truly does, not only for young people, but for all of us. So thank you. Now, if Nancy Acebo and Jaden would come to the microphone. You have to both come. It gives me great pleasure to read the resolution recognizing Sheriff Search and Rescue Volunteer Nancy Acebo and her canine Jaden for outstanding service. The following resolution is now offered and read. Whereas the County of San Luis Obispo encompasses an area of approximately 3,300 square miles, much of which is rural area with low density population, And whereas the Sheriff of San Luis Obispo County is organized, trained, and provides for a force of volunteer search and rescue members available for response 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and 365 days per year. And whereas Nancy Acebo has been a valued member of the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department search and rescue team for over 12 years. And whereas Nancy Acebo is a volunteer canine handler for the California Rescue Dog Association, CARDA, as well as an emergency services worker for the American Red Cross. And whereas the purpose of the California Rescue Dog Association is to furnish highly trained volunteer search dog teams for search and rescue, to train and promote dogs for search missions, to support and organize tests for search dogs, and to further the public knowledge, interest, and use of search and rescue trained dogs. And whereas Nancy Acebo is duly recognized and acknowledged by this board and Sheriff Pat Hedges as a compassionate and caring citizen of San Luis Obispo County, as well as a highly skilled canine team member, handler, and trainer. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors, in a regular meeting assembled on the 18th day of October 2005, recognize and appreciate the ongoing service, compassion, dedication, and skill provided to the citizens of San Luis Obispo County, as well as the state of California, the state of Louisiana, and the nation by Nancy Acebo and her canine partner, Jaden. So with that, if you would come forward. Want to shake our hands too?
Question. He can get up here.
Yes, if you want to come here and
Sheriff Hedges,
you guys, come on.
Would you join us?
How are you going to get the dog in the picture? You're going to have to move one side.
Jump
the other.
Up, the dog's going to jump. Up.
You can put him on it. Would the dog stand?
That's how she trains me too.
And now, if Sheriff Hedges would like to give the specifics of why Nancy is receiving this.
Well, thank you. Pat Hedges, Sheriff Corner. What happened was on October 9th of this year, Nancy received a call from through the State Office of Emergency Services that CARTA dog handlers were being requested to respond to Bakersfield, Kern County, to assist in the search of a missing 87-year-old woman who had been missing at that particular time for 36 hours from her home. And Nancy did respond and became involved in the search, and Nancy and Jaden, within a fairly short period of time, located the missing 87-year-old woman about 8 miles from where she was last seen at her home, and she was in relatively good condition. She had been outside for 36 hours, but she has recovered well, and the fact that she was found alive because of Nancy and Jaden's effort, I think, speaks well for the highly trained efforts or the highly trained how should I best put this? For the excellent work that Nancy does in training these dogs, and she does train these dogs not only for herself but for other handlers, and so I think it goes without saying that that we're very proud of Nancy and her work, and it speaks well of the efforts of all the search and rescue members. There used to be a bumper sticker out there that was on the back of cars that said, "Support your local search and rescue unit, your local search and rescue unit, get lost." unfortunately, that's not been the case. I guess fortunately, the efforts of search and rescue have not been put to task recently because of the advent of cell phones and GPS units. But Nancy and the other members of the team, some of whom are here today, continue to train, and this is the result, saving lives. So thank you.
And I understand that you were also in Louisiana?
Yes.
For a couple of weeks, helping down there. So, and thank you for that effort.
Thank you for the recognition.
So,
thank you.
Does that conclude your statements?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Shajan.
I would like to ask who else in the audience is a member of the search and rescue will stand up and be recognized. Thank you.
I'm proud to be part of this team.
Thank you all very much. With that, that concludes our presentation calendar. We will now open for public comment. I have three request to speak forms at this time. I think some more are coming in. So Steve DeVincenzi, followed by Eric Greeney. You're next.
Good morning, Chairman Bianchi, members of the board. My name is Steve DeVincenzi with San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. I wanted to use this time this morning to remind the public about some public workshops we are conducting called Community 2050. We held one this past Saturday in San Luis Obispo. We'll be holding three more workshops over the upcoming month. This coming weekend, we will be in the North County at the Templeton Middle School to look at issues in the North County. On November 5th, we'll be down in the South County at the Grace Bible Church on Rodeo Drive in Arroyo Grande. And then on November 19th, we will be in the city of Morro Bay at their Veterans Memorial Building on Surf Street. At these workshops, we are looking at the long-term vision for the community of San Luis Obispo and the coordination between the county and the cities and the community service districts in exercising a common vision for the long-term growth of the county. We had a very interesting session this past Saturday. The only, I think, ingredient we were missing was a real strong participation. So we're going to be out, you know, beating the bushes, looking to see if we can get a number of people out for these sessions. We got good feedback from those who did attend, and that's our goal, is to try to get better attendance at this point. Any questions I might be able to answer?
I see no lights, so I assume there are no questions.
Thank you very much.
But thank you for coming. Eric Greening, followed by Angie King.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. Yesterday and last night, some parts of our county got teased with a little rain. If you were crossing streets during this event, you may have noticed how slick and slippery the pavement was. Oil has been dripping, tires have been grinding for months and months since the last rain. What happened last night was enough to loosen it, but in the places I saw, not quite enough to send it all into and down the gutters, into the trash-clogged drains and downstream into our creeks and ocean. But that will come soon enough. This is the annual phenomenon known as first flush, and it's our dirty secret that needs to be a secret no more, but instead an item for action. The good news is that the Surf Rider Foundation and its branch, the Cuesta College Environmental Organization Grassroots, are committed to fielding people to sample the water at designated spots during the first flush event, whenever it comes. I'm asking that the county do all it can to help these public-spirited people get the resulting samples tested, and that the results form the basis for action items here at your board. We need to think of traps and filters at all drains collecting from pavement as being essential. We need to set up a funding source for their ongoing maintenance. This should include lobbying on the state level for a tax on motor oil so that the user pays for the safe handling of the material he or she purchases. And we need to look for innovative, self-sustaining solutions. In Washington State, a mycologist named Paul Stamets has been very influential in designing living fungal filters that not only physically separate the pollutants from the runoff, but which break down their harmful chemicals. We need to either bring him here to educate us or in some other way to investigate possibilities of self-sustaining living filter systems appropriate to our local climate and conditions. What we must not do is ignore the problem. Now, before I close, an unrelated question. The epic recitation of agenda changes did not clarify the time, item D1, which has to do with setting a hearing on a regional TDC moratorium. It did not clarify the time when item D1 would be heard. Can this be clarified now? Will it be the last item of the day around 3 or 4, or when will it be heard? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll respond to that after public comment closes, Eric. Angie King, followed by David Dugan.
Good morning. My name is Angie King. I am today representing the Adult Services Policy Council, and I have been asked to read this letter, which was already delivered to each of you. Dear Ms. Bianchi and members of the board, the existence of a proposal to eliminate the independent governing board of the In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority was brought to the attention of the Adult Services Policy Council and discussed at our October meeting. We are writing to express our concerns with the process to implement the proposed changes. At the meeting, we had only a partial report of the developments which are underway. We understand the County Department of Social Services intends to bring the proposal to eliminate the public authority as an independent board within the county to you for approval in October. We further understand that this decision by the department was announced to the IHSS board without any prior input from or discussion with that body. We hope you agree that the needs of clients and their caregivers should be addressed publicly in thoughtful discussions before any final decision is reached. As one of your advisory boards charged with bringing issues to your attention, we are partners with you in reviewing and considering changes that will impact the most vulnerable population in our county. In discussing the options available, we urge you to honor the input of the major players and stakeholders for this program. Most important are the views of the disabled and elderly who depend on this critical program and its significance for their in-home supportive services care. Also important are the views of the various public and nonprofit agencies in the county that serve this population. The governing board and staff of the public authority have spent years developing their expertise. They have provided a valuable service to ensure the safety and security of the in-home supportive services recipients. Board members told us that the proposed change was presented without any warning and without an explanation that justifies such a quick and dramatic change. Members of the Adult Services Policy Council are worried that the insensitive treatment by the County Department of Social Services will turn away from any future public service the valuable members of the Board of Directors and staff of the IHSS. We believe that if change is needed, it can be accomplished through thoughtful collaboration and respect, which continues to embrace the values of IHSS recipients and their advocates. We hope you agree. Please direct that such a process be implemented. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. David Dugan, and I believe Bob is, did you want this for public comment as well? So David Dugan followed by Bob Blair.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. First, I'd like to say I'm back. And I'd like to congratulate Shirley Bianchi on her 30% vote kill ratio. We had 30% people who did not show up at the polls in Los Osos because they were told their vote would, they could vote and it would be counted, but their vote would not count. I'll also talk about the failure of the Regional Water Quality Control Board to protect our drinking water. As the debate went on about nitrates, seawater intrusion began to take over our drinking water, the lower aquifer. I believe since 1990, certain people in the community have been screaming about overdraft and that the overuse of water is keeping the water tables high, therefore not allowing the nitrates to denitrify. We're being told now by the experts that were once our opposition are telling us if we had gone through a vigorous conservation routine for Los Osos, our nitrate levels would be substantially lower. Since 1974, this problem's been known. We also have a problem with our nitrate studies. We have a test well in the middle of town that went from above 7.4 to a 2.2 reading in nitrate levels in 1 year. That's in the middle of the residential area where the highest nitrate levels should be. It's not. I want to read something from an email that I've been privy to. This email was sent in 1999 to a certain individual involved in water modeling of our water resources. And in it, they refer to our nitrate study. And they say this, I don't want to get into the situation like the nitrate study where Tom and Wade rewrote the consultant's report to present their viewpoint. I don't know who Tom and Wade are yet. Also, Ferrano goes on to talk about their own water study. If we have to do it ourselves and submit that to the consultant for review and inclusion, that's the way it goes. These issues are so political, it will probably be quicker to hash it out among ourselves and give it to the consultant. That means no public input. Something's terribly wrong in Los Osos. It's got nothing to do with the sewer system and its cost. It has to do with build-out and people giving permits for people to build, and we don't have the water. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Bob Blair, and then that's the final request to speak for.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Blair, Rural Grandy, and also from Dayton, Nevada. I see Cacho laughing. All those faces, you should get some smiles this morning. I'm just passing through today on something else, and I wanted to take a look at these really magnificent facilities. It's very nice. And I wanted to give you an Nevada update. Gentleman here before about Los Osos sewers, 1974. 1974, they had the same opportunity as Napomo. They could have voted the sewers in. Napomo's sewers are paid for. Sewer rates could have been about $30. Instead, the same policies that have come out of this county for the last 30 years, no growth, limited growth, stop growth, make the water pipes smaller. All of this stuff has culminated into $200 and $300 sewer bills in Los Osos. And has it done any good? No, people keep coming anyhow. The only thing is the type of people that are coming have changed. You've created a two-tier society. Rich people, poor people, and the other group of people who have been here before are moving, selling out and moving, making them rich people too. They go into these other communities like my community in Nevada, buy two houses and a BMW. Luxury cars are in short supply in Nevada because these people from California are buying them faster and the dealers can stock them. Housing prices went up 28% in Nevada plus last year. I saw in the paper you don't like monster houses. Well, here in Nevada, there's other housing tracks, but here's one, 2,900 square feet to 4,400 square feet. The prices range from $500,000 to $800,000, and the taxes are less than $2,700. These houses are selling like hotcakes. Sprawl is alive and well in Nevada and the surrounding western states. Your smart growth may fly for a while, but it's just causing, I think, more people to flee this state. Because as soon as people get their money and move out of state, they sure as heck don't move into your California-style smart growth. And in closing, I see that the freeway in the northern part of the county is all repaved in good shape. In the FOMO, from Rio Grande South, we get a few strips of asphalt covering up some of the really bad places, and the rest of it looks like something out of a third world country. I'd like to know, is the freeway really coming lastly to Napomo, or is it going to stop at Aurora Grande and we're going to be forced to drive on rotten roads from our houses to Santa Maria? Freeway's really in bad shape, especially in the southbound lanes going to Santa Maria. And these little strips where you save the little buttons in the center dividers causes people pulling trailers to have problems because when they go over them, the trailers whip around and it's unsafe. We've had a couple accidents in Los Barrios Dip from that type of situation. I think either pave it or leave it go bad.
And don't thank have you for your it. Comments.
And thank you very much.
That's my last request to speak form from the public, so I will close it for public comment. And I have two requests to speak forms for the consent agenda. The first is Eric Greening and the second is David Dugan.
I am Eric Greening on item B16, the purchase of a mobile chemical sprayer for the Parks Department. The brief staff report makes it clear that it would be used to spray herbicides on weeds and possibly adulticides on mosquitoes. You already know my concerns about the chemicals involved. When pesticides are sprayed in agricultural operations, the areas are normally posted with warning signs. Will the areas sprayed with herbicides or adulticides be likewise posted? Will herbicides be used along roadsides, either in the parks or elsewhere on the county system? People walk along roadsides, especially including children. How would users be warned of recent spraying? For public health to take control of this sprayer, would a declaration of outbreak be needed? In relation to West Nile, would this money be better spent on bat houses? Fogging an area to reach a small dispersed target ensures that at least 99.99% of the substance reaches something other than the target. This would be wasteful even with a benign substance, but it is particularly questionable when the substance is a poison. The best control of a disease-bearing organism is a creature with sense organs and a motivation to go after the target. Finally, if the use of this equipment should lead to the death of a chemically sensitive person, what will be the real cost of this purchase? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. David Dugan?
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. I believe we're going to be consolidating some things onto a ballot. I'd like to ask, if I was allowed to ask, if a petition was validated on April 28th of a year, and the next regular scheduled meeting where that petition was to be presented and certified was on the 5th of May, I'm wondering if that consolidation works the same way as the consolidation here. If you can get something on a ballot and then anything that's related to it comes on later, and or doesn't even have to be related because petitions are on their own merit, I guess it would be their own subject. I was just wondering if four other measures came along in May that they would be added to that ballot. I know from personal experience that we could have had an election 29 days earlier if somebody would have consolidated the April 28th validation of the petitions of Los Osos. Recall should have happened on the 28th. It didn't. I'm just wondering how this works. I'm really confused that if somebody could hold off certifying a petition until May 6th, which is the day after the next regularly scheduled meeting, if that's truly the way the codes allow you to do that. As I read the codes, the word is shall. You shall attach a certificate to the petitions upon completion of validation. I would have a county clerk explain that to me and in the process explain to me how consolidation works. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have no other requests to speak forms on public comment. Mr. Ovett, do you have any items you would wish to pull?
No, Madam Chair.
Mr. Patterson?
No, ma'am.
Mr. Lenthal?
No, ma'am.
No, ma'am.
I'm going to pull 16 for just a response from Parks.
Hey, Jenny, Parks Manager. The issues I think that Eric raised are more to the one of whether we should be using pesticides, herbicides in our operation than this particular piece of equipment. This particular request actually is to replace a piece of equipment that we've used for many years and was stolen recently from us, is part of our efficiencies of getting our work done. I think the bigger issue that Eric is addressing is should we and how do we go about using chemicals to manage our open space and our parks. It's a legitimate question. It's one we ask all the time, and I guess I would invite Eric and anyone else who's interested to talk with us specifically about how it's done. I can tell the board that we comply. We have a very regulated program. We comply with any number of local, state, and federal requirements. We have certified applicators. We have people who are legally able to prescribe and limit the chemicals that we put down. I can tell you also that in the last 7-8 years, we have probably cut the use of pesticides in half by taking a much more stringent view of what we use and where. And safety is always a number one concern of ours. We post what we need to post. We use the least viable or least potent chemicals we possibly can to get the job done. But it is an expedient over 11,000 acres of parkland to manage and not enough staff to hand pull every weed to do so. The issue of whether we would help out public health in an emergency, we have a kind of a gentleman's agreement that if they have a need and we can provide equipment or staffing to help under their direction, we would do so, and we would try to make it as unbureaucratic as possible.
Okay. Thank you. With that,
I move approval of the consent agenda items with the corrections and additions.
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovent?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
You had press one closing the loop. You had a question from the audience about item D1, and unless your board unless your board wants to put it at some other time, we would add it to the agenda this afternoon. Following item C5, which is currently the last item on the agenda, that's the considering the MOU with the City of St. Louis regarding the city's sphere of influence, D1 would follow immediately thereafter, unless your board wanted to put it somewhere else on the calendar.
No, I assumed that that's where it would go, and thank you. I had that marked and for a response and then didn't ask it. If that's okay with the rest of the board, we will put it on at the end of the day at item D1 following, C5? Okay, I guess it's okay because nobody's complaining. So we will hear it at the end of the day. Thank you. With that, may we have an introduction of item C1, please.
Item C1 is a hearing to consider the appeal by Tri-W Enterprises, Inc., the Planning Director's determination concerning application SUP 2004-00056/C04-0473 from Tri-W Enterprises, Inc., requesting 17 certificates of compliance on an 84.92-acre property in the agriculture land use category. The project is located on the southeast corner of Thompson and Rancho Roads, south of Napomo Urban Reserve Line in the rural portion of South County Planning Area, 4th District. This item was continued from September 27, 2005. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal.
Thank you. May we have a staff report, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board.
Kimberly. And you have to really speak into that. And it's hard because it's so far away.
Don't get ideas.
I don't think it's on.
Is the green light on the bottom?
Green light is on?
There you are.
Okay.
There you
go. Kim Murray, planning and building staff. This is an appeal of a planning department's decision concerning 17 certificates of compliance. The application was for 17 certificates of compliance. However, staff analysis after reviewing the deed history only supported 2 regular certificates of compliance and 3 conditional certificates of compliance. Vicki, can I have the... Thank you. Just to give you some orientation of where we are in the county, this is an area that is southeast of the urban area of Napomo. It is agriculturally zoned. What you see on the screen is our land use category maps, and the outlying areas are showing the assessor maps. The Tri-W site there is shown. This is an aerial view of the property. Thompson Road is at the bottom of the screen, and Rancho Road is closer to the division between where the green and the dry farm area is. And this is a copy of the assessor map to show you what staff analysis of the deeds revealed. And that Rancho Napomo is a pre-1893 map, and the courts have determined that these maps did not create separate legal lots unless those lots were subsequently conveyed separately from the surrounding land. So what the deed history shows, and that's included on pages 15 through 18 of your staff report, that the lot 1 and the north half of lot 3, which on your screen are the white lots, were created legally by deed in 1889. The boundary of the area encompassed by lots 2 through 9, excluding that north half of lot 3, was created in 1890. However, the deeding away of lot 9 in 2000 created a violation, which is why those 2 would be conditional certificates. And then the lower portion of this property was created by deed in 1978, which was after the time when a deed could legally create a parcel of that size. The appellant has listed about six appeal items, which I'll briefly go through. The first item is that letters from staff are the functional equivalent of a certificate of compliance. There are two letters in your packet, one from Paul Crawford in 1981 and one from Karen Nall in 1993, that indicated staff understanding of the property at that time, which was that at that time we believed there were 17 parcels in that property. However, there was a process called a certificate of compliance process during that time wherein if they had applied, they could have received certificates of compliance and did not. So the staff letters are merely a recognition of what our understanding of the rules in place at the time were, and they are not certificates of compliance. The second issue is that raised was that the South County area plan and environmental documentation that supported that update recognized these 17 parcels. And the area plan does discuss this area both in the environmental documentation because the applicant had an owner-initiated request to go from agriculture to residential zoning and evaluates the impacts of that as an environmental document has to do. And also the South County area plan does make reference to this property and the property to the north being sites that could transfer their density to other properties. It doesn't specify that there are 17 parcels actually in the area plan. The environmental document does reference 17 parcels. However, this is a general plan and an environmental document, and those two documents do not create legal parcels. The third issue is that raised was that the assessor's office not only shows these properties on their assessment map, but also has been assessing the properties with the value of having 17 underlying parcels. And the assessment map has that big disclaimer, this map is for assessment purposes only. It does reflect the Lewis and Swift map that was recorded prior to 1893. But I do have some clarifying information. The information in the report indicates that the assessor's office was assessing the property as dry farm use, that there are outside the urban area questionable water sources for that property, and that is true. However, when the property was first, that bank that we're in discussion on was first assessed in 93. It was based on a sales price, and later the owner asked the assessor to reevaluate their assessment of the property because they felt the assessment was too high, and at that point the assessor did lower the assessed value.
And this is 1993?
1993,
thank you.
Correct. To reflect what is in your staff report, the dry farmland, the outside being outside the urban area, and the lack of water. And I believe Mr. Powell of the assessor's office is here today in case you have questions following my presentation. So our response is that the having those lots shown on the assessor's map and the assessment of those lots does not create the legal lots. The fourth issue is that there was a distribution by the court in a probate decree, and again, these probate decrees do not create individual lots unless those lots were subsequently conveyed separately from the land surrounding them. The fifth item is the acceptance of the offer of the dedication for public use of Rancho Road, and that having that used by the public and basically justifies the validity of the map that created the parcels. And again, this does not create the lots as a separate legal individual lots. And in fact, Rancho Road is listed as an existing county road on that old Lewis and Swift map that was recorded prior to 1893. There is no offer to dedicate Rancho Road or the road to the south, Swift Avenue, that was included on that map. Finally, there were some additional issues presented in the appeal letter. One was that the divorce settlement appraisal of the property was based on the information in both the letters that staff gave them and conversations with staff. For estate purposes, they were looking to set the value of the property. Again, staff does give the most recent information we have in our possession at the time. In 93, the courts had not yet clarified the determinations on these pre-1893 maps. Since that time, we've had a lot more information coming from the Supreme Court, and in fact, Lakeview and Gardner, the latest Gardner in 2003, have further clarified that. So in conclusion, Our recommendation is that your board uphold the planning department decision by recognizing the two certificates of compliance and directing the applicant back to the department for processing of the three conditional certificates of compliance. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions of staff? Mr. Sajjan.
Thank you. It's more maybe for our legal counsel. If the law is such, why do we have the discretion?
The law does provide that on pre-1893 subdivisions that a map does not by itself create parcels. And that's the law to which the County of San Luis Obispo is subject. As a matter of fact, a number of years ago, we were involved in litigation in which the county defended that position and actually won. If the board determines that that is the factual situation in this case, then the board should follow the law and follow the recommendation of the planning department.
Another question, since I've been involved with this property for many years, at that time when this were considered to be qualified for 18 lots, and I stand to be corrected, one lot was sold maybe to separate a partner. So would that lot then was sold illegally?
I'm not sure I understand the facts.
The 17 that's in front of us used to be 18. And one piece was sold, I don't recall the date. Then what would allow that sale go forward if the lots did not exist?
Kim, do you have the information on that?
Yes, I believe Mr. Shajian's referring to lot, what is shown as Lot 9 on the screen here, that is referenced as a conditional certificate. That was sold in, I believe, 2000 to another party as part of an agreement between the owners or an ownership resolution. However, it was, I believe, that they were always referring to 17 lots, not 18. But, in fact, the recorder's office will record a deed of sale, and the assessor then has to follow up with a new assessment because they are assessing a new owner for that property.
Just to follow what you just said, that it's always been 17, but what's in front of us is a one piece. So selling piece of that piece still does not follow the law in this case.
That's correct.
Because the law was prior to the sale of this piece property?
Well, it would be after, I think.
If, in fact, the owners had come to us in the late 1990s or even in 2000 to request certificates of compliance, at that point in time, our understanding of what our ordinances and case law was would probably have supported issuance of certificates of compliance.
Now, the date that what piece of property was sold was 2000?
Correct.
Okay. What was the date of the law that came into existence?
2003.
I'm going to refer to Mr. Lindholm on that one.
It was
subsequent to that date.
It was subsequent to that date.
Thank you.
I'll save my comments for later, Madam Chair.
Okay. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Murray, on item two regarding the separate parcels acknowledged in the South County Area Plan, you said that at the time the applicant had a zone change request in during that process to change the zoning on the land from agriculture to residential. They did not go through with that during the process, or why is it still zoned ag?
I don't believe it was supported through the public hearing process and eventual adoption by the board at that time. But the environmental document did have to evaluate all of the property owner requests for rezonings.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have no more lights from board members. So with that, the way we have an appeal. The appellant has 10 minutes to present his or her argument. And then the general public has 3 minutes. And then we come back to the appellant And there is, the appellant is the applicant, isn't it, in this case?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, okay. And they have 5 minutes for a rebuttal. So with that, we will open it to the public, and the appellant has 10 minutes.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Marshall Ohilski. My business address is 1026 Palm Street, San Luis Obispo. I'm the applicant's representative in this matter. My client is the family-owned corporation that was formerly known as Williams Brothers Markets. The property in question here was originally purchased by Merle Williams as an investment property approximately 30 years ago. And the property has been held by the family in one form or another since that time. And although the Williams family would like to be here, unfortunately members can't be here, but I have a representative of their corporation in attendance with me, Bill McInerney, who is also available to answer any questions you may have. I think as Supervisor Asajian can confirm, this has been a long and convoluted process even to bring this application before the board. If anybody wants to hear a chronology of what we had to go through to even get here, I'd be happy to give that to you. But in the sake of being efficient with my time, I'm going to pass that. What I'd really like to do is go through a short presentation of the points in my original application and my appeal and explain why we truly believe that the certificates of compliance should be issued in this particular case. I think the issue is really more simple than staff puts it forward. And we believe the issue is very, very simply how parcels that were considered by the county as legal up until the year 2004 can all of a sudden be determined not to be legal parcels. There's been continual representations from 1883 until the year 2004 that these were legal parcels. And I'm going to go through that documentation and explain why we believe that those should cause the county to issue the certificates of compliance. This appeal really is not only about the law, but it's also about fairness and equity. And I think I'd like to start first, if I could, with the letter that's included from Paul Crawford in the staff report, which is on pages 41 and 42. And this letter is clear as can be. It's in a response to a question from the prior property owner prior to the sale, questioning the legality of the lots. And it says in this particular letter, all the original lots in the subdivision, which are the 17 lots, are legal parcels which may be developed as individual building sites. This letter comes from Mr. Paul Crawford, who is the director of the planning department at that time. This is the functional equivalent of a certificate of compliance at the time. I would question the board and ask them, if you received this letter, would you believe that there was any further action required on your part that you needed to apply for certificates of compliance or do anything further? I would answer no. This letter is clear, unequivocal, and it says that no further action is required. I mean, I don't know how anything could be any more on point and any more determinative of the fact. I would also, and I appreciate County Council's position, but what they're doing is relying on statutory law and case law that takes effect after this letter was issued and after there was a number of other actions by the county confirming that these were legal parcels. The Gardner decision is really not germane, and I'll touch on that in a minute here. The question is, or the issue really is, you can't have a ex post facto law that changes the legal status of something that exists prior to that. These were legal lots. Ms. Murray said in 1990 they considered these to be legal lots. And then all of a sudden in the year 2004, they're no longer legal lots. You just can't do that. I mean, it can't be done. It's equity. It's an issue of equity, and it's an issue of law. In matter of fact, in the staff report itself on page 7, the staff report states that as late as 1990, planning staff would not have questioned the legality of the lots. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to go back and question them. The other problem I have with that is it seems like staff can pick and choose when they decide project or parcels are legal or not legal. I mean, we go through 100-some-odd years saying these parcels are legal, and then all of a sudden, at some arbitrary, what seems like an arbitrary point in time, we're now saying these lots are no longer legal. We're not only saying they're no longer legal, we're saying if you want to get certificates of compliance, you have to conform with the laws that are in effect on that date. That's just not fair. Staff can't pick and choose what laws to apply to what parcels at what time. And that's really what I think happens here. I think that if I could move on, further supporting our application here, or pardon me, further supporting our position that we're illegal or we are entitled to the requested certificate of compliance is the fact that the 17 parcels are included on the official maps of the County of San Luis Obispo, dating back to 1913. This map, as it says, was compiled from the official records for the Board of Supervisors by the county surveyor in 1913. If I go to the next one. These 17 lots are clearly shown on this map. I have a blow-up of that. I guess we could skip. I have a blow-up showing. They're on this lot. They're on this map. If I could go to the signature block, please. This map, the official map, was approved and accepted by the Board of Supervisors. This map is emphatically, and I can't say this any stronger, an official map as that term is used in the Subdivision Map Act, Government Code Section 66499.52. That section makes it clear and applicable part that an official map is a map made by the county supervisor with the approval of the Board of Supervisors. That's what this map is. As such, it is exempt from any future requirements after 1893 under the Subdivision Map Act. And I don't think that there can be any argument or question over that. And I think the parcel's inclusion in this map specifically addresses the applicability of the Gardner case that County Council raises. Under the facts of the matter currently before the board, Gardner is simply not germane. Because there is no, and I want to emphasize this, there is no holding in Gardner whatsoever that invalidates legal parcels approved after the Act of 1893. There is nothing in Gardner that applies to this particular case because of that subsequent ratification of the parcels in the 1913 map. I would like to just go on and discuss some of the issues that Ms. Murray raised very briefly because I know I'm running through time here. I still believe that the letter from Mr. Crawford is the functional equivalent of certificates of compliance. It's not up to the client or the person applying to the county to question the planning director when he gets an unequivocal letter. And I think that addresses both 1 and 6. And also there was a subsequent letter from Ms. Nall in 1993 that reiterates the same item. The attached indicates the recordation of 17 legal parcels. Since the map is already recorded, the county cannot require any additional improvements by the subdivider prior to the sale of the lots. Again, this is unequivocal. There's just no question about it. And I think it was justified for my client to rely on these representations by the county. I would also like to talk about the 17 parcels are identified and numerically identified in the South County Area Plan update. Not only in the environmental documentation, but in the area plan itself. It's indicated in the text on page 44. We can pass that by. And on the map, the official map included in the adopted document. There's the 17 parcels. It couldn't be clearer. It's identified as a transfer development site. It's identified as a sender site for transfer of development. You don't have a transfer of development site if you don't have legal parcels. That's just common sense. On the assessor's parcels map issue, I mean, we're not alleging that the assessor's parcel map creates the parcels. We understand that they're illustrative. But what happened here is my client, if we could pass that by. My client owns two adjacent pieces of property. They own the 17-acre parcels and the 80-acre parcels adjacent to them. This is a property tax assessment for the two properties. One of them is assessed at $1.56 million, which is the 17 parcels. The other one is assessed at, and I don't have the number before me, but a much lower amount. Now, staff, pardon?
It's about $2,000-some dollars.
$2,000-some dollars. The exact same property. Now, staff says The difference in the two assessments is that one is a 1993 transfer, and that sets the base year, which I totally agree with. It takes it out of Proposition 13. The problem is, what is the property tax based on? It's based on the sale price. The property sold in 1993 based on representations by county staff that there were 17 lots. So it created a much higher sales price, which then creates a much higher assessment. So whether it's whatever it's assessed on, whether it's dry farming or whatever, bottom line is that we still had to pay extra money because
and
the sales price based on those representations. And I will conclude with that, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And I'll be available to answer any questions or a rebuttal to any further comments.
Well, you'll have 5 minutes after
thank you.
At the conclusion. Thank you. Mr. Wynn?
My name is Mike Wynn. I'm from Napomo. I do not live quite close enough to these to have a conflict of interest, but they're within eyesight of my home. Normally, you would expect me to come on this kind of a topic and be opposed to it, but I do believe in property rights, and I have to tell you that after having looked at the documentation myself and seen the letters from your planning department that clearly said that they had full development rights, I'm convinced that there should be homes built on these parcels. I would urge you to recognize the work that your planning department issued in the past and to issue certificates of compliance. The scenario that we went into originally was that when the general plan amendment for the 88 acres north of there went in, that these development rights were transferred. But I do understand that these are two different groups of owners, and that just as I don't have the right to take my neighbor's development rights and transfer them for my own purposes, that that partnership that owned the 88 acres did not have access or legal right to assign the development rights from these 17 parcels for their own purposes. And there's nothing I think that we can legally do to sort of take away these rights and give them to another party. It's a little disappointing. I had thought I would have less density out my window when I look south, but what's right's right. And I would encourage you to give those certificates in accordance with the law. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have no other request to speak forms on this item. So if you wish to rebut, you have 5 minutes to... I doubt if you wish to.
Thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair, but I think that I would like to thank Mr. Wynn for his support. I don't think that there's anything further I can add. All we're asking is that the certificate of compliance be issued in accordance with the past county representations, and I'm available to answer any questions, as is Mr. McInerney from Tri-W Enterprises. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, I see no lights, so I assume there are no questions.
All right, thank you very much.
With that, I will close it to the public and bring it back to the board for discussion. I have some questions, but I'll wait till everybody else is finished. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions for clarification from staff. It was mentioned that in the South County Area Plan, this particular site was offered as a cinder site, therefore implying that there were... development credits to send. Is that, I saw no reference to that in the staff report. I'm just curious about that.
Actually, I believe it is on page C1-5 where we talk about the
issue number two.
Area
the
plan.
Standards listed and the pages tied development of the parcels to the northwest, to the re-subdivision of the parcels and the Tri-W property, and also some additional property to the northwest. There are standards in the South County Area Plan that anticipated whatever development potential this property had hopefully would be used elsewhere.
Okay. Thank you. And then a question for County Council regarding the comments about the 1913 map that was actually adopted or approved by the County Board of Supervisors?
Yes, there was an official map that was adopted in 1913. It did not have the effect of creating lots. And in the litigation that I mentioned, Benary versus the county, this very issue was raised, and the court determined that it did not create lots. So that's not an argument that that map created lots.
Okay. Thank you.
And then I see no other lights, so I have some questions that came up. On the letter from Paul Crawford, in my mind, this is a letter that would indicate that if the owner of the property took action, that all the original lots in the subdivision would be legal parcels. That they are legal parcels if the landowner takes, takes action.
In other words, if the landowner at that time had filed an application for certificates of compliance, then any changes in the law down the road would not have impacted that property. But people's rights are affected by changes in state law and case law all the time. There are changes in county law sometimes will change their rights. For example, your property could be zoned industrial, and you might be thinking about erecting a factory, and the county might rezone your property so that a factory is not allowed. Your rights would have changed because of a change in the law.
Thank you. That's where I was aiming. Thank you. Mr. Shajan?
Thank you. Just a question, a comment to Mr. Lindholm's comment, that if we were to do that, there will be town hall meetings, public hearings, and quite an action on our side to be sure that we're all aware what's going on and what's happening so people can come speak their minds and show their support or opposition. That can be done locally, but I wonder, this law, what took place on what level? Not on our level.
This change was in the courts.
Right. And the chances of somebody in an unincorporated area thinking that this law was going to apply to them, were they notified by whoever was changing this law? It's not the same as we changing a zoning in a local community and having to go through an entire process, and yet somebody might not even know where Nipomo is, change the law and impact somebody's livelihood. If you're done with questions,
no, not yet.
Comment,
Mr. Ovid.
Well, I was going to make one question, and this is where I disagree with County Council. That you're correct in one sense: a map doesn't create lots, but when it's officially recorded, it recognizes lots that exist. And I think that's the one thing that has not been answered here. Every time the question is asked, it comes back that this didn't create the lots. It's correct. What we have here is a case that we recognize these lots were in existence from as early as an official record of 1913 and on down, and subsequently shows in the linear record we have here. And I think that the issue with Gardner does not take place on this because the lots were recognized and in existence prior to that. And I sit here probably not wanting to interpret what Mr. Crawford meant by that, but the issue is that if it required certificates of compliance, and as I've seen letters subsequent to that time period of Mr. Crawford from the staff, they recognize that there are lots, but it does require certificates, and staff has so noted it to the people that have applied for any kind of recognition. So I do have disagreement with the fact that I think that every piece of information we have here is recognized that these lots were in existence, and you're correct. They did not create them, but they were there already.
Mr. Lindthal.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Supervisor Obert touched on a couple of my comments, but the difficulty here, I think, is we're asked to interpret a case law decision in 2003 and not consider really the totality of the circumstances here. And I think a reasonable person would say, I have a letter, I'm on this path that these were lots. There are different maps, one 1913, one before, how valid they are, whether they're approved, all those things are I guess, legal questions. But would the expectation be of an average property owner that there were these lots before, at some point in time I was going to do this, I've been paying taxes with the understanding that there are lots there, and then all of a sudden have someone come at the 11th hour and say, well, because you didn't file for a certificate of compliance or you didn't do this, you didn't comply with the letter of the law. Well, I'm not sure how many things come out in a case law decision that the average person would say, unless you were in the legal field, how would I know to do that? And I guess the question bears, how many more of these are we going to have in the future where people say, I didn't know that my property had changed or something with that regard? And I've had some discussion with county staff, and I think we are on a slippery slope here, because obviously what we do, we have to defend, and it's going to be subject to a challenge or appeal later on. But where you have a situation to where there are several different indications that these are lots, then I think that has to be equally weighed with what a court decision was. And that's what I think our job is here today, is to take the totality of those circumstances and try to render an opinion.
Okay.
Can I add one?
Mr.
Want to say it, and I'm going to go back to this reference to the Minari issue. The Minari issue recognized that there were 156, and I may be wrong on the number, existing lots. What they did not recognize, because the original map, was that the other balance of those lots were transferred as tracts. So they did not recognize the tract, but they did recognize the lots. And I think there's a difference in this particular situation and in the Minari, from my opinion.
Okay, I see no other lights. So this particular item was of particular interest to me, because it was a personal interest to me, because we own some property with underlying parcels, and I make out those APN numbers with the tax, with the check for the property taxes a couple of times a year. But it would never occur to me not to, and maybe it's because of my position, but it would never occur to me to come down to the county and say, well, we've been paying on those now for I don't know how many years. I mean, I could figure it out if I wanted to. Therefore, they're separate parcels, and I don't need certificates. The certificates are implied. Well, they're not implied. I would have to come down here and apply for certificates of compliance, and I would have to obey the law as it is in place at this time. And so that's my only comment. I thought about this a lot. I mean, I sat out on a rock and looked at the underlying parcels. and I have to support staff on this one, because I can see in the future the logic that's being used to say we have these certificates, we don't need to apply. You know, they're implied. That's a really dangerous it's a dangerous precedent to set. And as I was sitting out there looking sitting out my front yard looking up at the hills and all of the underlying parcels, and I'm thinking, my God. So anyway, that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
I received that call yesterday from a lady who was concerned about this property, and my question to her was, do you have a certificate of compliance, because she lives in an unincorporated area? And the answer was, I don't know. And if I was her, I would have had the same answer, I don't know. And we have had problems with this. We had a piece of property in an unincorporated area of Sroyer Gandy was in escrow, and the folks who were selling it had an exchange out of state buying another piece of property. When the new buyers came to the county, they said, that property does not exist. And this is not the fault of our staff. It's just what the law has done to us. And we need to take responsibility to correct some. And those of you who are watching or listening to us, if you live in an unincorporated area, don't take it for granted. Call the county. See if you don't have a certificate of compliance, because, as you know, not every mom and dad going to afford an attorney and a consultant to come and fight for you and bring the legal issues to where it needs to be. From the early days when I came on this board, the family wanted to develop this property. I did hold a meeting with our county planning staff, with everybody that I could think of, with the community members and NCSD and everybody that could have possibly say about this property. Their wish was to put a senior care center, and our response to them was, we'll support your rights. You have 17 pieces you can develop on this, but we will not support any density. Later on, within the last 2 years, 203, 204, and a gentleman named Wheeler, who purchased a piece of property attached to this, our recommendation was, at least mine, that I will not support anything more than what you're zoned for, but you can purchase from the same owners their rights of the 17 property. And I was consulted on this by our planning department members, that if he was to do that, we'll allow the 17 units to move to his property, and we can keep this an open space and allow that gentleman to add 17 more. So every time I had discussions with the property, with my staff, with my office, it was always considered to be 17 lots. So with all that, I can go on, and don't want to put anybody to sleep, but everything that I've been involved with from the day this piece of property has come to my attention, it were the 17 lots. And we expect the lot to be supporting our rights and not work against us. With that, I'm going to move that we uphold the appeal and determine that the property does qualify for 17 regular certificate of compliances.
I'll second. And the reasoning is that what we're doing is recognize that the lots were in existence by all the record, but the person has still got to get the certificates in
yes.
order to make those legal existing lots.
My question is would this will need to be a tentative action to come back
to
the board?
It will be a tentative action to
okay,
come back
and
with
a date?
Can you give us a date, Madam Clerk?
Well, you're looking at two dates. You either have some time on November 8th, because I don't think this will take much longer after this point, or December 20th.
Well, I include November 8th in my motion.
And does the second concur?
Second concurs.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
No. With that, we are going to take a 15-minute break and come back at 25 minutes to 11. We will be breaking at precisely 11:30 if we haven't completed the morning session. We will go into closed session, and I assume that at how long will closed session last this morning?
20 minutes.
Jerry says 20 minutes. I'll affirm that.
20 minutes? Okay. We will return at 10 minutes to 12. Okay? This time you'll have to make it 20 minutes. We will return at 10 minutes to 12 for the introduction of and the announcement for the Cattleman of the Year at that time, and we will also have, I hope, a report out of closed session. Thank you very much.
How long is our break? How long is our break?
15 minutes. 10:35, we're back. 10,
yeah. Yeah, I can drive.